choices, new players, new models of care. You know consumer-first healthcare is everywhere. For us to build the future, to see what's new, we gotta look at the world from a different point of view. Consumer innovation ain't going away. I say it's here to stay. Today it leads the way. We gotta drop the silos. We're all the same team. Experience, business, tech, and marketing. So join us now. Join the revolution. Consumer first health is the evolution. Status quo or like status no. Yeah, this is the healthcare rap. Yo, come on, let's go.
Welcome back to the leading podcast about consumer health and wellness. I'm Jared Johnson, and here's what's going to go down today. We have the flavor of the week about Peloton's most recent consumer health report. What do attitudes about fitness reveal about healthcare behaviors? And what's the value in bringing connected fitness and other preventive aspects of health and wellness into the forefront of the consumer experience discussion? I'll talk about that. Then we wrap up season 10 with Ted Moser, senior partner at Profit. Ted gives us a clinic about the quickly evolving platform era and how healthcare organizations should and shouldn't leverage platforms to grow their influence and improve consumer experiences. It's time to dive right in. Are you ready? Let's go.
Flavor of the week.
Peloton's latest consumer health report focuses on how changes in season influence health and wellness behaviors, and in the process it also reveals some insights that apply universally, no matter what time of year. On the heels of its inaugural report released last December, Peloton published its Spring Wellness Trends report, which reveals the changes in habits and perceptions around fitness and wellness during the transition between winter and spring. Peloton's goal with this collective research is to better understand people's motivators and challenges in the pursuit of fitness and wellness, and gain insights into how fitness impacts us physically, mentally, and socially. Their research shows that spring's longer days and warmer temperatures propel Americans to prioritize their flexibility, nutrition, mental health, and physical appearance. As it ushers in a new sense of motivation, spring has a defining impact on how people budget their time and money, as well as what activities they engage in, whether by themselves, with friends and family, or even with their pet. Overall, the latest research study found that spring serves as a reset, spurring Americans to prioritize goal setting, redefine what qualifies as a workout, and leverage technology as a means of motivation. It included three key findings. First, spring encourages mindset shifts in fitness and wellness priorities. As we transition from winter to spring, we see a shift in what goals Americans are prioritizing, both physically and mentally. More of us pay attention to our physical appearance and mental health. Women are more motivated to engage in fitness and physical activities to feel confident in a swimsuit than men, while men are much more likely to be motivated by training for an athletic event. Second, as the weather warms, Americans are redefining what qualifies as a workout. With the renewed focus on trying new fitness trends, Americans reimagine how everyday activities, such as mowing the lawn and walking a pet, can be considered a workout. And third, technology serves as a fitness motivator for many, but some still hold skepticism. Fitness-related tech has a clear impact on the wellness routines of individuals across generations, ethnicities, and genders. Among those surveyed, most are in agreement that technology makes it easier to track progress toward fitness goals, helps them reach their fitness goals more efficiently, and improves their health overall. Now, I hope that including Peloton's point of view can help us better understand our relationship to fitness and wellness, from our everyday routines to our values and perspectives, to better understand what drives our individual journeys. I also hope that you can see the value in bringing connected fitness and other preventive aspects of health and wellness more into the forefront of the consumer experience discussion. Because while healthcare has been battling itself, look no further than the backlash against retail health, the uncertainty around telehealth and health at home, or the decades-old conflict between providers and payers, while all of that has been going on, health consumers have been engaged in their health by everything from connected bikes to 1,000 new wellness products from Target, and now with the rise of GLP-1s. And unlike our highly segmented view of ourselves in the industry, most consumers don't compartmentalize their health in the same way. They don't slot each of these things into many verticals. In a consumer's mind, it's all part of feeling good and maintaining a quality of life, aka wellness. So I believe these proactive aspects deserve a lot more of our attention these days if we want to truly understand how to engage in better health. Which is why, spoiler alert, you're going to be hearing a lot more about engaging the modern health consumer in season 11 starting next week. So stay tuned. Let's spend more time studying how consumers view their relationship to fitness and wellness, and how that influences their attitudes and behaviors about healthcare long before they become a patient. That's another way that we'll build the healthcare of tomorrow, and that's the flavor of the week.
The flow.
All right, everyone, let's get into the flow. I am very excited for our topic and our conversation today. It's a treat to have Ted Moser here. Ted is a senior partner at Prophet. He's an author of a book called Winning Through Platforms. We're going to dive deep on that. And we're going to talk about this rise of the platform era to begin with and what a platform can be used for and maybe what it can't be used for, what it won't solve for us and help make better in healthcare. And then we're going to just hear about what all that means in the future and where we can go with some of the ideas that are here in the book. So let's get going here. Ted, welcome to the Healthcare Wrap.
Thanks, Jared. So glad to be here. Really appreciate it.
It really is a treat because there's so much packed in this book, and I've heard it referred to as a playbook. I'll back up a little bit and give our audience a chance to get to know you a little bit better to help them see the world as you see it a little bit here. Can you give us a 2-minute description of who you are and what you're all about?
Sure. The company that I work for, Prophet, P-R-O-P-H-E-T. Prophet is a growth consultancy. I've spent 3 decades or so in management consulting and growth consulting, helping my clients anticipate what's next in the market. It all starts with the customer, works backward from there. How's our customer changing? How are their priorities changing, their behavior changing, their expectations changing? And what sort of business do we need to design to stay a step ahead of expectations and needs? In doing so, around the turn of the century, you know, the digital had lit up what we call the customer's choose journey. Every customer has a choose journey where we decide what we're going to buy, and then a use journey where we use whatever it is we chose. And digital lit up the customer choose journey. We had digital marketing, we had e-commerce, and I was deeply engaged in those sorts of new technology rollouts, as well as, you know, bigger growth ideas associated with them. And what happened along the way, about 2010, is digital began to light up the use journey. Smartphones came into being. Cloud service providers came along and rented out their data centers to startups who could then innovate without having to own heavy IT. And sensors got cheaper and cheaper. And what began to happen was it was possible for customers to do something that had never been possible in business before, watch their customer use what it is they had bought and be with them while they were using. For me, that was a paradigm shift that was profound, because the use journey is actually where most of the customer's action is. If you were to say, how many hours do we spend choosing and how many hours do we spend using? The use hours are much greater. And so a company that could be always on watching the customer use and all the chances to add value, as well as the chances to misbehave that came out of that, were pretty important. I felt like it was worth writing a book. I had written one a while earlier about how the internet was going to change where companies could win and lose. And I thought this was a good companion book to that, around how the lighting of the use journey would change the way companies did business. Now, you can think of that as business at large. We can think of it as healthcare in particular. And the inspiration around creating a playbook of that was, I felt like there were cross-industry patterns that could be distilled. So I studied about 50 or 60 successful platform companies and said, what did they do over the last 10 years to take advantage of this, to add new value, to create new value? And how can we turn that into a, not 3 easy ways to succeed, but sort of a 2 dozen play playbook that a business leadership team can say, let's learn what the plays are like a sports team would. And depending on what our situation looks like, figure out which plays we should be using. I felt like that would be the most valuable way to serve the market. That's the book I wrote over the last couple of years. And we just launched it beginning of this year. It's done well. It was hit number 1 on Amazon in the US and UK in its category, and has won its first award recently. I'm excited about the potential of it, because management team after management team tell me, you know, this is a very hot topic for us. We're trying to figure out how to make this work. So that's a little bit of the background. Really, I'm just interested in how companies can better serve customers and get outside of the 4 walls of the inside out thinking and take outside in thinking, take technology and go from there.
Well, it's a fascinating journey, because a lot, we like to ask our guests, you know, about some good news that they've had in their lives. And I'm guessing the book itself, you know, could be considered a bit of good news, not just the project's done, it's completed, it's shipped, but also where this can go. And I imagine there are so many insights that came, some expected and some unexpected, as the book developed and as it was being written. Let's start with kind of some of the basics about the premise, the thesis. Let's dig a little deeper on that. Tell us about just the whole, the thought lot of the platform era.
If I can just quickly riff on the good news thing, you're right about being done with the book, although one of my friends who's written several books said, congratulations, the 90% now begins. So it's, you know, the post-writing. You know, one thing that to me is fun is I do a lot of work in microfinance with a couple of global organizations working on bottom of the global pyramid of income and how, you know, we're now creating platforms for small shareholder farmers in Africa or platforms for school innovators and how they can reinvent education in hard to reach places. So there's a lot of good that platforms can do, as well as a lot of, you know, modern day business they can do in the worlds we live in today. So I think there is some good news there, just to riff a little bit on the question you raised, Jarrett, about how platforms can be beneficial to nonprofits to achieve social goals, as well as, you know, for-profit companies to achieve their business goals. You know, a little bit more about where this came from. What I observed when I began to not only look at the platform market, but serve clients who were transforming to become platform companies, I was struck by what a paradigm shift it was. And it's the equivalent of the, as I mentioned, the early 2000s move to websites, to the internet, as big of a shift as the Industrial Revolution, because it calls on companies to fundamentally shift their center of gravity. And we've built companies either about production of goods or about the selling of those goods pre-purchase. The idea that my center of gravity is in the customer's use journey as they're using is really a new muscle. It affects the org design of companies. It affects their value propositions, their brands. It affects their customer experience. And it changes what capabilities matter within the company. And it really requires the company to have every member work together because a platform creates interdependencies. I think what I was struck with was this is as big of a paradigm shift, and management teams are just sort of catching on to that, where I need to be able to rethink everything from my growth strategy to my client success. So the way that we organized the book was in six big questions. How can a platform enhance my business? This is a question for the strategy officer, for the senior management team. Second set of questions, how do I design a platform business? What are the design points and what are my choices that I have to make? So there's a set of plays around design. And we said, how do we grow it effectively? That's a third set of plays or questions. How do we innovate in an ongoing way? That's a fourth one. And then how do we internally coordinate across the customer journey so that they have a on-brand, compelling and personalized experience? And then the very last set of questions, how do we run our company? What's our operating model for a platform business? So as I mentioned, there's 24 plays, 24 ways to win, and they're broken up into those six categories so that if I'm a company who says, hey, how do I use a platform to enhance my business portfolio? We talk about different models that you could choose from. We talk about how it goes all the way from, you know, Disney, who says, hey, let me put a magic band around people's wrists as they walk through the theme park, you know, as well as let me launch a streaming media service. Both of those are platforms, and both of those are watching the customer consume media or watch the customer consume the park experience. And if I can track that data, I learn a lot more about what my customer cares about person by person. And then I can serve them better in the products and services I offer them after that. So it can go all the way from a conglomerate, don't think of us as a platform company, to Nike, who doesn't have sensors on the bottom of my tennis shoes yet, but can watch me run through my Apple Watch, through my exercise devices, through my cell phone. And when I go to Nike's website, I'm not just offered shoes. One of the things it asks me to do right off the bat is to join a community. There's four communities: Nike Events, Nike Run, Nike Fit, Nike Sneakers, for the collectors of the world of sneakers. And Nike found that if somebody joins two or more of their communities, they've got four times the life cycle, customer lifetime value, as somebody who doesn't. So it's Nike being with the customer as they use through platforms that is transforming Nike's ability to create loyalty, create engagement. So when we talk about platform companies, they're the ones we would always think about, right? Salesforce.com, Netflix, blah, 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 right? Meta, Google. But there's what the message of the book is that platforms are no longer for the tech titans only. They are now accessible to everyone. What's usually missing is strategic imagination as to what it would take for me to be able to watch my customer and be with them and then have what we call a value for visibility exchange. If you let me watch, if you lower your privacy barrier, here's what you're going to get. And that's that new value proposition where the consumer says it's worth it because you're going to add so much value to me that I will willingly accept that. And then we're off to the races because once I get to know my customer that much better, I have competitive advantage over the company who can't do that. So platforms aren't a nice to have. I think they're a must have over the next few years for companies. You know, if I ask you to make a list of companies who skipped putting up a website in 2000 and watching their customer go shopping and talk to them while they're shopping, make me a list of all the companies who passed on that opportunity and are still thriving. I think you wouldn't find, you could name a company. And I think 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we're going to ask the same question. Tell me a company who skipped the chance to be with their customer as they're using and is still thriving today. And I think that the sheet of paper will be blank. You won't be able to find one. So I think this is existential for companies. And it takes a management team to go, let's go on a new journey together to create a new capability.
Well, there's a lot packed in there. And I'm thinking through the lenses of a couple of different audiences here, starting with the health tech audience.
Yes.
Those who are used to a very clearly defined set of kind of hub platforms and data sources that feed the healthcare experience, but then a very quickly evolving portfolio around that. If you're in the health tech space, how do you use some of these concepts or some of these plays that come to mind?
I find there are probably four major areas where I see platforms being used in health overall. One is for the patient, especially if I have capitated value-based healthcare, where I want to be able to both keep the patient healthy rather than only fix them when they're sick. And that's a platform opportunity, as well as in having a seamless experience of using healthcare services, increasingly outside the four walls of the acute care center remotely, and then getting care within the home as well. So there's a patient vector to that. There's a professional vector where I have labor shortages of doctors, nurses, where I have fatigue, and how can platforms make my life easier as a healthcare professional delivering services and have me feel like the institution that's employing me is helping to develop me, helping me to collaborate more easily with other parts of the system. Obviously, there's a payer side to that connection as well. There's another side, which would be the medical device makers or the operations, could be surgery or others, where almost all new devices have an element of telemetry to them. So that as I use a device on a patient, I'm creating a new data stream that enables me to observe the patient's whatever pathological issue I'm dealing with, pathology issue I'm dealing with, observe it over time. And then the fourth one would be on effective healthcare delivery. I've worked with multiple major healthcare systems that say the data set that we're able to create now within our patient base or in collaboration with others may be superior to the data set that we get from third-party data providers as to what works. So how are we using platform about our own operations to understand what generates health and become a better healthcare provider, looking at system-wide, the customers, all their touch points? How do we put that all together analytically? So I think platforms, to your point, Jared, are infusing almost every aspect of the healthcare system. And I find almost every healthcare delivery company has multiple platform teams that they're standing up trying to figure this out and get on top of the data, obviously respecting all the privacy rights that are required and should be required. But at the same time, using all the rich data streams that where they can use the anonymized data or personalized and approved data to better serve patients and drive better healthcare outcomes. So I would see platforms as critical to achieving our goals of better healthcare at less cost. We would see them as critical to deliver the consumer healthcare goals of making healthcare feel more like any other business where customer satisfaction is deeply cared about and acted on by companies. You know, so I think a lot of what we hope for healthcare can be delivered through platforms as companies work out the kinks. To answer your question about the kind of plays that are in the book, let me just quickly touch on a couple. One play that's in the design section of the book is called My Customer Coalition Edge. How do I think about who should be in my customer coalition as a healthcare provider? We talk about how while products go from a company to a customer, platforms go to this coalition of customers, and they can include users, sponsors, service providers, creatives, advertisers, and rulemakers. And crafting my decisions as to who's in that coalition can be one way that I differentiate my healthcare company, my healthcare operations. So there's an act of strategic creativity. Obviously, sponsors could be employers in a healthcare world, or they could be heads of household. Users could be that patient themselves. And then service providers, there's a lot of them that could come in. One of the jobs of a platform is to give each one their own view in a way that fits them. So customer centricity is all the more critical in a platform world than it even was in a product world, because I have to look at the system from every customer's angles and say, what view do they need of common data, of common software, of common information, and how do I get that data to them so they have the unique view that they need? So I think designing a platform has rich creative opportunities. Delivering healthcare in real time as a customer's health conditions are sensed, I think, is another play that is really important. We talk about it in the in-use enrichment play of the book. I'll give you an example of a non-traditional healthcare company that's getting into the healthcare business. Mattress companies that are putting sensors in the mattress, watching me sleep, changing the firmness of the mattress, changing the angle of the mattress, changing the temperature of the mattress based on biometric signals that they're getting, and giving me a score of quality of sleep in the morning. And now doing studies with Mayo Clinic and others as to how those scores might correlate to apnea, might correlate to cardiovascular health, to other aspects. All of a sudden, I'm turning a mattress into a health service, you know, during the time when I'm horizontal. And so it's a great example as to where platforms create new possibilities for enhancing the health of the consumer with strategic imagination. So that sort of play of how do I enrich as the customer uses is another play that I think is a good example. And then maybe a third I just mentioned was dynamic segmentation. The segmentation schemes that companies typically use are, I fit into one segment and I'm always that segment. In a platform world, segmentation schemes change as I go through the journey if I set them up right. They're much more modular and they can be combined together, and they drive personalization of services. So how I, as a healthcare provider, change the way I segment the customer as they move through the system of their pathology cycle. So those are just three examples of plays in the book. I think all of them apply to health, but those are three illustrations that hopefully feel relevant.
You mentioned Customer Coalition Edge as one of those, right? And I'm looking at that play here in the book, and it refers to this statement that when debating what brings competitive advantage to a business, strategists often debate the importance of business size versus business shape. So that's the design part you were referring to. And I love that. I thought this is infusing some relatively innovative thinking into a model like healthcare delivery.
Yes.
Where we are learning as an industry, I feel like, to start tackling some of these traditional challenges of actually providing a connected experience by doing so within a network. And so that definitely caught my attention, that there weren't single entities or types of entities in healthcare designed to deliver the type of experience that now meets a consumer's expectations. That's not how they were built. That's not what they were considered as they were designed. And so our destination is a coalition or a network. That is pretty new thinking here.
I think that's right, Jared. And using shape as a differentiator is an important idea. You know, I think the fact that competition in a platform world is based on who has access to what data helps explain why all of a sudden CVS is getting into the game of care delivery, or what Amazon and Google are doing in this space. Not only do we need to start with this network design thinking, but we need to have open eyes to broader than traditional players as both partners as well as threats as we're designing the ecosystem that we want our platform to serve. So it does take a new mindset from start with the healthcare service and sort of go inside out to go network design in. It really takes a new type of creative thought in order to make that work. And you know, we have a before and after story of Uber in the book around Customer Coalition Edge. It was already a high-tech company. It was already a platform company from the get-go. But the first management team said it was all about the rider and the driver and geographic scale. And that's it. And they bled money. They had a hard time differentiating themselves, even though they had scale. And so the second management team came in 4 or 5 years later and said, let's retreat from some of the tougher geographies. And where we are, let's build a richer customer coalition. So let's bring in restaurants. Let's bring in local stores that need something delivered. Let's bring in shippers. Let's bring in truck drivers. And all of a sudden, we created a much richer fabric that let us have differentiated value propositions to drivers, differentiated value propositions to consumers that Lyft had a hard time matching, that DoorDash had a hard time matching. And so it was through design thinking of the network that was actually the source of a differentiated value prop. It even gave Uber the chance to enter into a new type of loyalty service, something we see popping up in networks if they're richly designed enough, which was loyalty as a service, where you tell the customer, I have an idea, why don't you pay me to be loyal to me? So Amazon Prime is that idea, right? Why don't you pay me $170 a year or $190 and I'll give you $800 worth of value back? And if the customer says, I'm going to bite on that value prop, I am now on the same side of Amazon of wanting to use Amazon as much as I possibly can to get the value out of the investment I made in being loyal. Uber One is the same idea, but it requires a horizontal richness of services to create that sort of an offer. So part of this is thinking, what sort of shape would let me create an offer that's differentiated? So I'm sort of playing a different type of chess, if you will, in my head as I think about network design and where I can create a unique value proposition.
What type of influence do you hope that this book has in an industry like healthcare? Like, what could these ideas do for this industry?
Yeah, I would love it if the industry had patients who were better served and felt like the customer centricity they were getting from a healthcare provider was the same that they might be getting from, you know, a more traditional business provider that was more shaped around their needs, around their convenience, rather than shaped around the provider's set of rules as to how they deliver service. So better customer satisfaction, patient satisfaction, healthier patients, happier doctors and nurses, lowered healthcare costs as a percentage of GDP. Those are all things I think that we aspire to as a system. And, you know, the U.S. system, don't need to say, you know, doesn't look like most of the rest of the world systems, has unique virtues and unique vices to it, but is a fascinating experimental design pool. And I think through platforms, it's going to be possible for the U.S. to create rival systems that all of a sudden have some of the goodness of government-sponsored healthcare in other countries without some of the downsides of those other healthcare systems. So I'm hoping you can find that sort of third way that nobody's found yet between the comprehensiveness of a system in really meeting customer needs, but cost-effectiveness of a system in sort of delivering the quality of care. One other good example that came to mind as we're having this conversation was, since so much of healthcare is becoming risk and, you know, based, whether it's plan driven or whether it's HMO driven, you know, the insurance industry in areas where the insurer can watch the customer take their risks is a thing that we see happening. So auto insurance is a great example. So many auto insurers now say, here, I got a deal for you. Put the sensor in your car. Let me watch you drive. And then I'm going to tell you how much your car insurance costs. And don't take the sensor out of the car, because that's going to change the rules of the game between us if you're hiding from me how you're driving, because I want to see the good and the bad. So it's that same value for visibility. If you are a safe driver, prove it by letting me watch you, and then I'm going to change the price of the insurance that I give you. So while personal health obviously has other boundaries around that, and disease states might affect some of the rules of that game, this idea of a value for visibility in personal health, I think, is going to go up as well. Hopefully, it will lead people to lead more preventative, healthier lifestyles in order to try to drive down a more personalized price of health, at least in areas that they can control. So those are just a couple of thoughts around what kind of influence I hope that platforms could have in healthcare.
Well, this has been fascinating. Again, I think one of the goals of the book was clearly to open our minds, open our eyes to what's possible, and help kind of cross check between other industries and just see what's happening. So I just want to wrap with one other aspirational question, because that gives us something to shoot for. I feel like any progress along the route to that destination you just described is going to be worth all the effort. So kind of tying that into one of the themes of our show here, which is consumer innovations. So things that do help us lead healthier lives in a more convenient way that matches our expectations. And that usually that translates to someone's made something easier. Someone's made something fit more within my life that helps me feel seen, as opposed to I feel like I've been an inconvenience to you, healthcare system, you know, which is a very different emotional outcome of that encounter. So what types of consumer innovations do you hope we're talking about a year from now in healthcare?
Serving me in my spare moments, serving me in the cracks of my life rather than make me reorganize my life around healthcare is one very achievable thing. I personally am a member of Kaiser. And when I go to make an appointment, the first question is, would you like this to be a phone call, a FaceTime, an email, a chat, or a visit? You know, please check how you'd like to interact with us for this next thing you need. Or would you rather have a doctor that you don't know, but that's available in 3 hours to talk to you about it? Or a doctor that you do know that's available in 3 weeks? You know, what's your trade-off of time versus intimacy? And so just creating greater consumer choice that's driven by the power of digital to modularly configure itself around customer situations. I can be the same patient, but answer those sets of questions differently the next 10 times I see a doctor. I could have 10 different permutations of that answer, being the very same customer, but each time reflecting the situation that I'm in for that problem that I have, for my how much pain it's causing me or concern it's causing me, and you know what the rest of my life has going on. So I think that modularity, the configurability around the customer is really something that digital is ready to do today and healthcare providers can make progress on every year. So while some of the things I spoke about were a bit more meta and a bit more, you know, years in the making, I think some of these things can be more months in the making in terms of the types of superior experiences they can deliver.
I would absolutely agree to that. And I want to thank you for your time here, Ted. I think a couple of takeaways that I'm going to bring with me. One is the fact of, as we talk about health tech, right? As health tech thinks about the ways that they can use platforms or be used as platforms to be a part of this network effect of creating a coalition within healthcare and not just viewing a single entity here. If you can use the ability to observe how people encounter healthcare, how they experience it, and connect some of that data with those who are providing the care and use that in any way possible to improve that experience. Like, those are the muscles we have to build here. And so I will bring that back with me in terms of how those things come together. And then the other part is where this all can take us, that as we have this mindset, as we think about the encounter itself and we truly focus on the needs of those who are being cared for, that more of these solutions will come around and will get us to a better place. So again, just so much to think about. I really appreciate the time here. And with that, that's a wrap for this episode. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with Ted Moser from Profit. Thanks again for joining us.
You're very welcome, Jared. Really a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please spread the word. Tell your colleagues to tune in for all the awesomeness, then leave a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This show is produced by Shift Forward Health, the channel for changemakers. Subscribe to Shift Forward Health on your favorite podcast app, and you'll be subscribed to our entire library of shows. See our full lineup at shiftforwardhealth.com. One subscription, all the podcasts you need, and it's all for free. And remember, we might have a lot of work to do in healthcare, but we'll get there faster together. Thanks again.